I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita.
Good evening, Vashon Island. How are you doing? I am Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies, a travel show. And today we have on the very well-known Dan Chasen, Jack Chasen, as we were just discussing, to be honest with you. Dan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine.
Are you good? It's a little balmy day out today. Feeling good? The rains are coming.
The rains are coming.
Coming fast. That curtain is falling. So Dan is going to read for us a story today about a trip that he took with his late wife, Barbara. Dan, take it away.
Okay. Of course, I promised her the world. Barbara and I were in Seattle. I had burned some professional bridges and felt it might soon be time to move on. I wanted her to come with me. One Saturday, we walked from my apartment on Lower Queen Anne through Seattle Center to a Chinese restaurant on Tillicum Place near the statue of Chief Seattle for an early lunch. The place was nearly empty. We sat in a booth. If she went with me, I said, we'd go to New York, London, Paris, Istanbul. I listed a whole array of places to go and things to do, including a trip to Marseille to eat bouillabaisse. She did go with me. We got married. We went all those places and more. Except Marseille. We got close. Months after we were married, we went to Paris, found our friends Randall and Al in the 16th arrondissement, and spent a week sleeping on their living room floor. I'd known Randall in college, and when Barbara and I lived in New York, he'd become a good friend. He was very bright and very idiosyncratic. When we got married, in a judge's chambers in Lower Manhattan, he was one of only five people we invited. The rest of us waited for him to show up. And waited. Finally, I called his apartment. He was still in bed. It was an afternoon wedding. During the day, Barbara and I walked the city of Paris. At night, we all went to cult American movies and ate Vietnamese food. The next time in Paris, we were with our kids, then in their early teens. We were staying in a boutique hotel in the 7th arrondissement when our daughter got appendicitis. She wound up in the American hospital in Neuilly. Her surgery, performed by the only American heart surgeon in Europe, went just fine. But when Barbara went to settle the bill, she found the hospital administrators had never heard of our Blue Cross insurance. We certainly didn't have the money on hand. No problem, the hospital administrators told her. Just write a check. We'll put it in the safe. When you have enough money in your account, let us know. Hard to believe, even then. But we didn't get to Marseille, and she gave me a lot of crap about that. If she'd only known I was lying about Marseille, she'd say, she might have made other plans. So for our 25th anniversary, I bought plane tickets, made hotel reservations. We were going to Marseille. We'd go other places too, but we'd start our trip with that bouillabaisse. We flew to Paris, rode the TGV south, got a hotel room overlooking Marseille's old port. For the long-promised bouillabaisse, we took a taxi to a modern restaurant overlooking the sea. Had a wonderful meal with a white wine from nearby Cassis. Back downtown, we were walking through the streets when every bar erupted, spewing people onto the sidewalks, talking, drinking, singing. Marseille had just won the French soccer championship. The next morning, we found a few zombied celebrants still wandering the waterfront. From Marseille, we drove a rental car to the village of Salardou, partway up the Val d'Aran in the Spanish Pyrenees. The valley held a string of villages, all with slate-roofed houses, each with a 12th-century church and a slightly more recent bell tower. Some people still drove sheep through the streets into the lower levels of old houses. The hills were veined with pale stone walls, the new grass dotted with edelweiss. A big, ugly ski resort stood at the head of the valley, but the rest was pretty picturesque. The food wasn't much. We ate our best meal at a hotel right on the river. We had trout prepared with raisins and bacon. Our waiter stressed the fact that the fish had come from the water right outside. If we said trout, he added, from the river. We drove out of the valley to a Spanish national park where we got caught in a snowstorm, and to a hill town where we found a group of old guys sitting in front of a church, while a teenager with a pellet gun shot pigeons. We also found the woman with the key, and she led us into a church basement where we admired a fresco from, I think, the 12th century. Another day, we drove through the mountains to Seo de Urgel, where the Diocesan Museum, hard by a Romanesque cathedral and cloisters, has a fine collection of Romanesque and medieval art. On the way home, we took our landlady's advice and detoured into Andorra for a cheap gas. From Salardou, we drove to Toulouse, took an overnight train to the Normandy coast, then a bus to Mont-Saint-Michel. Barbara had long been interested in medieval art and music, and the medieval village of Mont-Saint-Michel, built on a big rock right off the coast, was a place she wanted to see. A UNESCO World Heritage Site, crowned by its abbey and its tall spire, actually added in the late 19th century. Mont-Saint-Michel was a pilgrim's destination for centuries, and now, of course, it's a major destination for day-tripping tourists. Somehow we weren't prepared for that. A herd of tour buses parked just outside the town had disgorged hundreds, maybe thousands of tourists into the narrow streets. Carousels of postcards and souvenir tchotchkes made the streets even narrower. The crowds moved like shoppers pushing into a big box store for a sale. I got claustrophobic. As we struggled uphill with the hordes, I felt close to panic. Barbara saw an opening to one side and led me out of the crowd. I could breathe. A passing pigeon crapped on my shoulder. That just added insult to injury. I could hardly stand it, but back we went into the scrum. We went up to the Abbey Church. I remember very little of the place. We still had to get back down through the crowd. We'd booked a hotel room there for the night, and anyway, we couldn't get a bus out of town till the next day. We had to make the best of it. Barbara suggested going down to the beach below the town. We did. It was night and day. No crowds, no frenzy, no claustrophobia. A few young Europeans were hanging out there looking out at the sea. Or rather at the place where the sea used to be. They obviously knew, but somehow we didn't, that Mont-Saint-Michel had the biggest tidal swings in all Europe. The water recedes as far as 12 kilometers, then comes rushing in with, so they say, the speed of a galloping horse. We joined the other people looking out across miles of wet sand. If you look at a landscape that used to be under sea, you see another world. At Newfoundland's Mistaken Point, where we stood some years later, while Atlantic waves battered the rock just below, the shell beneath our feet had once been undersea too, near Africa. Forms in the rock looked like the vegetation of an almost familiar foreign flora. They weren't. The forms weren't plants, but primitive animals. The old seabed had held them for half a billion years. Finally, we saw the water. There was no horse to compare it to, but it did come rushing in. The sight was incredibly dramatic. It made much more of an impression on us than the Abbey had. That wasn't the first time a magical piece of nature had salvaged a difficult day for us. Years before, we'd climbed a steep trail above the Ho rainforest in an all-day downpour. When we arrived at Ho Lake, we saw there was no way to keep water out of our tent, so we moved into a log-walled shelter in which two guys from Seattle had already taken refuge. We didn't share our homemade bean soup or our avocado with them, but we passed around our Jack Daniels, and we were all snug and dry while the rain battered the roof. The next morning when we woke up, we saw sunshine and heard a strange sound. We got up and looked out. The sound was elk bugling. Right on the other side of the little lake, we saw a huge herd of Roosevelt elk, the half-ton bulls bugling and jockeying for position on the shore. It was a spectacle we never forgot. The tide at Mont-Saint-Michel was kind of like that. We stayed until the water came all the way in, late in the day. By the time we left the beach and walked to our hotel, the hordes of tourists had left, the carousels of tchotchkes had been locked away, and the place was charming. We had a good dinner that night. I ordered skate wing and a white sauce, and the next morning I got up early and ran out along the road through the marshes, away from Mont-Saint-Michel. After a couple of miles, I turned around and ran back, straight at the iconic view of the spired town on its great rock. We packed and left. We could eat bread and cheese when we got to the station. By the time the tour bus hordes hit the streets, we were out of there.
Ce n'était pas le radeau de la Méduse, ce bateau, qu'on se le dise au fond des ports, dise au fond des ports. Il naviguait en perpénard sur la grand-mare des canards et s'appelait les copains d'abord, les copains d'abord. Ces fluctuates, nec mergiture, c'était pas de la littérature, n'en déplaise aux jeteurs.
So Dan, you have to tell us, because of course everybody's waiting with bated breath. How was that bouillabaisse?
It was wonderful.
Was it?
It was really good, yeah.
So what year was that you went back to Marseille?
It was early 90s.
Early 90s. Adam and I, whenever we go to Paris, we always take a train down to Marseille. I know that... TGV or whatever it's called. Yeah, very well. It's a very unique city in that it's so French and yet it is so like Algerian and Moroccan at
it
the
is.
Same time.
I remember going to a farmer's market there. It wasn't a farmer's market, but it was a produce market, you know, and they had labels on everything where it was from. And an awful lot of the stuff was from North Africa.
Yeah, it's so much of it. In fact, the hotel that we stay at, it's really close to the train station. And it is an Algerian, Moroccan neighborhood. And it is one of my favorite things to do is to go shopping in all these tiny little shops. And there's a bakery that we go to that has, it is Algerian, but they have like French pastries as well. And then there's sort of like this mashup of like French and Algerian pastries. And that kind of thing just makes me insane. Like I go there and I just buy so much stuff. I end up not even really eating so much of it, but I just am like, oh my God, I have to have that and that and that. And it's just beautiful. It's beautiful. I just love that so much. And then I get all like these cans of harissa and take them back because we're on our way to Sardinia.
Sure.
Which only, you know, the area that we go to only just has Italian food, Sardinian food. And so it's nice to just be able to get other flavors and bring them down there. It's beautiful. I love it.
Were you aware of it a couple of, well, it's more than a couple of years ago, Martin Koenig twice, I think, brought this group of musicians from...
Algeria.
From Marseille.
From Marseille.
And they sing in the old language of southern France, Occitan.
Oh, really?
And they're really good.
Oh, God, I would have loved that. Oh, that sounds really beautiful. He does a lot of really amazing things musically.
Yeah.
It's too bad that we can't enjoy any of those at the moment, but it'll come again.
It will.
Yeah. Yep. Southern France is a very special place. I love it there. And I love the singer, Georges Brassens, that we were just listening to. He is like an old-fashioned protest singer from France, from, I think it was from the 60s, right? Do you know him?
Well, 68 was the, you know, the big protest year there as well as elsewhere.
And yeah. Big, he's a good one to
conflicts
follow.
Conflicts between students and the police.
Yeah. Well, it's not stopped. And today, and I know that we're not supposed to talk about times, but today is the actual election day. Well, it was yesterday, and we're doing the counting right now. And so we'll see in the next day who's going to be our president for the next 4 years.
It is a scary moment.
It is a very scary moment. But it's good that we can reminisce about Marseille.
It is.
Dan, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Awesome. And now we're going to have the Mr. Michael John Whitmore. I'm really big on middle names today. My middle name is Elise. Not very exciting, but... But, you know, John is pretty exciting as a middle name goes. All right. Michael Whitmore is going to read us a story about road tripping, basically, right? Traveling through the mind. Correct, Whitmore? Whitmore, are you there with me?
Yeah, I'm here, I think. Oh, yeah, I'm here.
There we go. We have him.
There I am, except... I should do this really quickly.
Yeah, there's these little, we call them microphone condoms, these little things to keep everybody safe. And Here we go. Here's a new one. A fresh microphone. Yes. Condom.
There we go. There we go.
Very close to Michael's mouth.
Yes.
Maximum microphone sound effects there, Michael. That was very good.
Well, we're getting there, guys. Thank you for your patience.
I could have muted you, but no, it's way more fun this way.
Oh, yeah. No, this is what radio is all about. extraneous noises. Yes. Okay.
Tell us a little bit about what you're going to tell us.
It's an excerpt from the novel I've been working on. This is actually one of the more incomplete chapters, as you will apparently hear. It's about driving down through California. And this is...
Which is where Michael's from.
Right. From Southern California. This is Northern California. Or is it Oregon? And it's just the thoughts that go through your head when you're kind of lost in the middle of the night and you've quit caring about where you get or why you're getting there or going there.
Or how sleazy that motel is going to be.
If you get
with,
if,
with
if,
bed bugs.
If you actually don't sleep in your car at a rest stop. Yeah. It's kind of chaotic, but I've been in those road trips where.
Well, so Michael, for those of you that don't know him, is a musician.
Yes.
And a DJ on Vashon Island and around the world he's been.
Yes.
So he is no stranger to very long road trips.
No,
as musicians often
no,
are not.
I was always, when I was on tour, I was the nighttime driver. And I would just play math games in my head all night. How many miles we had to go, divided by 60. If I was going 85, how fast do I get there? If I'm going 75, how fast do I get there? So I'd spend hours.
Wow.
Just, yeah.
Well, that'll keep your brain young, snappy, smart.
It left me kind of bitter by the time morning came around. So this is just a scattershot. It's a little bit all over the place. But that's how brains work, I think, in the middle of the night when
yes,
you're not exactly...
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well,
okay.
All right.
Here we go.
Thank you.
Northern California, blasting down some long highway, shifting gears, guzzling gas. As for any useful geographical information, there are no signs posted anywhere. Nothing except a couple of hand-painted red and white billboards on huge slabs of plywood reading gas, 25 miles, and later, gas, 12 miles. I presume this two-lane road will at some point wind up something other than a dry riverbed, find a real sort of humankind. Hopefully I won't come across some NSA top-secret classified alien landing strip or a mid-century Quonset hut bejeweled with gutted slab of cattle and a probing station. I'm not in the mood. Right now, not a house or telephone pole trims this roadside. It's about as nowhere as blacktop gets in this country. Well, pretty much. There's Montana, Wyoming, certain neighborhood in Bakersfield. As might be anticipated, and thank you, Hermes, you old god of the road, the highways, all mine. I'm going nowhere alone, just me and my thoughts and a half-empty, lukewarm travel mug of coffee, poking along, left hairpin curve after right hairpin curve, meandering. This may be the wrong direction or a useless exercise and a long line of useless exercises, but what I think I need and what I have here, I got plenty, a good dose of what the hell. No doubt, I'll be calling for a mulligan soon, but somebody show me a better answer or a quieter detour. Go ahead. You could use your hand signals. Wave a 7-4 flag. Me and old Toyota Corolla, we're going native, feral. We need something more. How about a carne asada burrito washed down with a frosty cold bottle of Bohemia? My tongue waves hello, grins. Oh yeah, maybe a couple of radishes nibbled on between mouthful of pinto beans, rice, and hunks of grilled steak, skirt steak, marinated in lime juice and garlic, a little cilantro. That might just remedy the thumping ache in my head. Yes, please, good lordy, yes. Some hazy breeze from the south must have sent up that aromatic fantasy. I'm about that. And yes, I'm salivating buckets here, tongue-tingling, tiny electric sparks. Unfortunately, I presume I'm a few miles from any exit with a restaurant, let alone a good Mexican one with Mexican food. And a hell of a long ways from those delicious late-night taco trucks parked near downtown L.A. You can almost always find one or two in the Echo Park District, along the terminally congested intersection of Sunset and Alvarado Boulevards, serving up wondrous things late, late, late on any given night, any time of the year, where all the action in the nightclubs and bars winds up ridiculous. Redemption, sanctity, and nourishment is only a few dollars away. A sidewalk burrito at at 3 a.m. blesses you with a slight spicy afterburn, and yes, salvation. Ah, the good life. That's just one more thing I've missed about L.A. Simple, perfect food at a simple, perfect price. The savory taco truck fantasy has to evaporate. Deep fried fast food is all I'll find here, I'm sure. And here comes another odd inkling. And no, not anything helpful like where I might actually be. No, just a hunch. But it's sending peppery chills down my milk toast spine. Yeah, intuition. She's coming around to play games. I can feel you, baby, burning, searing my throat, pushing a thirst. Somebody pass me a tall glass of cool, cool water. Now stand back as I fathom the depths of this latest eye-opener. Here's a painful fact. Many of these idiotic moments ornamenting my life, scraping my hide shiny and raw, have been foreshadowed by a light bulb realization of something wicked and stupid coming my way. As sad as it might be, even in my own head, I'm a bullheaded ass, can't get out of my own doltish way. Example. When intuition glowed her 60 watts worth of possibilities, prophesying the stock market crash down to the double martini lunch, I kept my meager penny stock in long after the pump and dump. Say so long to Nikki's, my son's state college fund. A few years later, something else said, hey, there's trouble ahead. And I still got on that damn motorcycle, smiling like a pin-headed fool. I see it now as big as Hokum, as big as the oncoming Metro bus running me down at the corner of Hollywood and Argyle, grinding my rather mediocre good looks further down the evolutionary scale along some subtle yellow line. There's a winning move. Four lanes of greasy gravel pitted asphalt, thick with oil, fast food wrappers, and other discarded trash chiseled into my arms and back. Should I accept at least a modicum of blame for such avoidable ass kickings? Certainly I'm so no shining example of brains too big to fail. I'm simple. Chaos is inevitable. Like winter flu or a hangover on New Year's Eve, inevitably some vexing thingamajig, whatchamacallit, will explode in my face. Afflictus defaultus decussus. So what's dictating these new revelations on the 5 South Freeway? Or is it the freeway? Bad dreams, indigestion, a calcium deficiency, MK Ultra, alien implant, mommy, or some smart-ass voice shrieking deep inside my chest, insisting it'll guide me through life. Bingo. To paraphrase a great man, there are three kinds of BS. BS, damn BS, and the butt-kicking BS that hands you your head in a bucket. I'm having one of those moments, a sprinkling of intuition, and a likelihood that a hefty dose of said BS is about to defecate on my shiny traveling shoes, right here, right now. And me without a shovel or paper towels. No matter, intuition presses on as predictable as always, vague and shapeless, pretty much gooey and worthless. BS is gooey, but never rated as worthless. That's a dangerous place to settle. Here's a conundrum. I want to trust my intuition, but that can be a hell of a dodgy move out here in the middle of nowhere. You can never tell when the intuition might instigate a quick bait and switch, turning something canny into a drunken, untrustworthy terror. And that bastard's always on the prowl. Real problem, my intuition is more than flawed. It has a knack of retranslating noteworthy signals into pure gibberish. Now, I have a knack for gibberish. I'm just not fluent. I know I'm babbling. Oh, fatigue. Keep it together. Just a little longer. Just a smidgen longer. At least some imprecise, delectable lure fills in the missing pieces. Inspiration would be good. Elysium would be better. A drunk night on my own couch at home would be best. For now, in my heart, my highway to satori and bliss runs through a carne asada burrito. Traditionally, moments like this are best heartened by booze and drugs at a pinch of music. There's your Elysium, some kind of good. It's not perfect. It all goes hand in hand, millenniums old. I bet early humans found some kind of mind-altering drug or invented some knee-bending elixir not long after they discovered fire, and not long after they first pimped their women for a sharper rock or a larger cave with a water view. And not long before they created the wheel or God. Most roads like this, the empty ones, always tempt me to stray even further from my own destination. Old habits. But I'm working on being focused. You see, I know now that focus isn't just a model of a Ford. Focus, I hear, provides purpose and direction. But here's the trouble. Direction needs purpose, and I have little purpose. And looky there, to the signpost up ahead, and next stop, you don't want to know. Most craven idiots, such as the one behind this wheel, sooner or later find some kind of direction, even by accident, dumb luck, unintentional momentum, divorce. The chances are most people eventually waddle into the novel flux we call maturity. Well, I never got there, never found it, never figured out the schematics, never figured out the timing or the rhythm, nada. There has to be a rhythm, right? Even money says it's a foxtrot, yeah. Forward steps this way, heel first to slower toe, slide, sidestep, toe first, wait. Moving like a grown-up. Apparently it's easier said than done. Absolutely. I don't know. What has been the most important thing I've learned? What have I learned about dancing or laughing as a musician, as a dad, husband? What was the most important thing I picked up at the tax-paying Democratic Party line voting, lawn mowing, taking out the garbage Thursday night Joe Jr. college guy? What was the most important thing, lesson I learned in primary school? Did I ever escape Catholic school? Did anyone ever escape high school? Those freaked out hormones days. Hell, I limped away from high school by cover of darkness under a tarp, wearing a plastic Groucho glasses over an El Santo wrestling mask. Yeah, stuff lingers even now. Early this morning, one of my bleakest stretches of highway, I recalled a typical teenage day, something I hadn't thought about in decades. The big throwdown, me versus Dominic William. Fisticuffs. The funny thing, neither one of us had anything to do with the original trouble instigating the whole hoopla. 11th grade, shooting hoops. Out in the yard, lunchtime, and away we shot. We bounded off the side of the rim, ricocheted behind a backboard, knocking over somebody's soda propped up on a notebook on a bench. No big deal, except in high school where the simplest crap goes algorithmic. The infinite numeric output of ego times testosterone divided by undetermined manhood squared. Horrific incident indeed. My God, it disrupted the whole natural ebb of ditching classes and scamming co-eds. Filling a half-empty can of root beer might as well have been a gauntlet slap across the jowls, followed by a full-blown yellowish splat of phlegm in the eye. A duel to the death, or at least until first blood gets spilled, standard protocol. Two men enter the ring, swinging wild haymakers. Two boys get suspended from school. The immediate frenzied teenage heir with the poetic language of adolescent diamondism. I'll kick your ass. No, I'll kick your ass. Your mama this and your mama that. What you say about my mother? On and on and on. The philosophical musings of greenhorn hooligans that play in the fields of the board. Oddly enough, me and my opponent, Dominic William, we both stepped in for noble reasons, truly noble goals, to resolve the split, to resolve the spilt A&W root beer conflict. Of course, I didn't realize at the time these disagreements can only be resolved with amateurish karate kicks to the groin, or until the taller of the two, at 5'5", that certainly wasn't me, gets their face filed down along the gritty outdoor basketball court. I couldn't see anything as I grounded Dominic Williams' head across the painted line on the cement floor. Rage and blubbering huge tears blinded me, rolling down my cheeks as I inflicted the greatest destruction I could imagine on old Dominic William, destroying his face, but better yet, annihilating his reputation. I left him looking like a flunked taxidermy exam. But in due time, Dominic Williams healed up fine, just not before he came back and bounced me from one foul shot to the next a few weeks later. You know, the fact is, I had it coming. I looked so innocent at 16, kind of weird considering I had such a wicked soul. Not much has changed. Today I'm crankier, wrinklier, sadder, and I believe reprisal free. I'm no Zen master by any stretch. I just know there isn't enough time in the lives of 100 men to complete my wiki list of retribution. That includes Dominic William. Hell, that was just 3 minutes of my life, and a life grinding gears and guzzling gas. Fleeing a score or any score will never happen. Not a chance. I know that. I might wish for justice. I might hope for some kind of justice. But we know what that hope is. Hope is a Frankenstein. Perhaps after I'm dead and gone, if there is justice, I'll haunt all those who plagued me in my life. And their heirs and their pets' heirs. Thoughts while lost in Northern California. My road, ode to the road. Who knows, maybe I'm actually in Florida. I'm actually in Oregon. All-seeing eye, oh, great Oz, give me an answer. And while you're at it, point me in the direction of a good burrito stand, something soon, and maybe a semi-sanitary place to relieve myself. Oh, St. Drugo, the patron saint for coffee and the great bilocator, who could be in two places at once, and also for some shattery crackpot reason, the patron saint of whom others find unspeakably revolting. Brew me a grand-sized cup of Joe. Quetzal. Bless my caffeine. Oh, great prophet Zaquan, find me a restaurant for damn it. Find it now. Did I just say that out loud? You just behave. From behind the counter, a woman's voice reprimands me, though said with a pleasant enough tone. As for the crowd at the cafe, most of their expressions are rather suspicious. Ugh, people. There she is, behind the pastry counter glass, kneeling, wearing cuffed khaki pants and a corporate blue button-down blouse, a croissant in hand. Her manner suggests she flosses with threadbare losers like me several times a day. I couldn't help but notice a missing button at the top of her uniform. Now she was smiling at me, a big, happy-go-lucky grin filled her face and eyes. Nice teeth, not so nice nose, and her cheekbones were a little pointy and pronounced, but oh my God, she was kind of dazzling. Not an incredible beauty, but in definition, yet she's so striking. any desire for something as simple as a carne asada burrito that just got rerouted. Dark hair and eyes, thick long lashes that should have weighed down her eyelids above a pale, slightly blemished face as plain as a sink of water. But whenever I caught her smiling, the water rippled. In a cliche, I'm memorized. Another cornball word, enchanted, comes to mind. I'd be dancing in a tuxedo in a 30 screwball comedy. Oh, to be single again. Oh, to be younger. These young coffee house divas, do they understand their power, their erotic muscle? They have an inkling of such gifts, but I doubt many realize their colossal sexual clout. But she pulled a good espresso. Oh, trouble, trouble, trouble may fill the horizon. I'll be yet another devastated, heartbroken customer. Get in line, boy. Did I order anything? Just weirdly jet-lagged, I explained, feeble-like. She looked at me somewhat befuddled. Her smile sprouts a flimsy, questionable look. A look I've seen too many times on a million other occasions when I've opened my mouth and spewed something plain and stupid. Jet-lagged. I bet there is an airport near her. Her name is Melody. She might have been the tallest woman I've ever stood next to, and though she could have been intimidating, she was as easygoing, come-see-come-saw matter about her. Something about her says SoCal. I could easily see her playing volleyball on the beach in Venice or Southern the South Bay. Well, actually, I'll be driving most of the night, so I'm a little more jet-lagged, freeway-lagged. Oh, that makes sense because, you know, she says, there's no airport near here.
Something there in the corner of my eye, hidden beneath the sun-kissed sky, swaying off the trees where the vines, they look like braids in the moonlight. Lights are low, but the car's outside. Is this place still vacant tonight? Turn the handle just to see what's inside. Oh, oh, to my surprise, it was fate, it was us.
Michael, that was fantastic. You have such a beatnik stream of consciousness writing style that is
it's
super unique to you that I love.
It's the character of the story is like that. I'm not like that at all.
No, not at all.
I saw you smile when I was talking about the burritos at
Well, yeah. So first off, I'd like to say this. There are so many crazy thoughts that come through one's mind as they are on road trips because there's literally nothing to do. Nothing. You know what I mean? And so many of your thoughts, I had a good laugh when I was listening to them because they're so random and they just bop around your head and you go from one place to another place to another place. And and I know that the story is about that. But of course, what intrigued me the most was I also lived in Los Angeles in the same neighborhood that Michael lived in.
Yes.
For many, many years.
Yes.
And when he said there was a taco stand at the corner of Sunset and Alvarado, I can tell you the name of that taco stand, and it was called Alegria. And for years, I went to Alegria before she moved to Sunset and Moltmann.
I know, exactly.
Yeah. And it is, well, they closed last year, the year before. Yeah. Which I was devastated, even though I don't even live in LA anymore. But it was absolutely one of the best.
It was great.
Mexican restaurants.
Yeah, and there was all the food trucks who were there late at night. Also, just yeah. Like I just it was Shangri-La for like great Mexican food.
Oh,
or
my God.
Salvadorian food.
It was just amazing. For years, I worked at a nightclub. It was a hip hop club in LA called Chocolate Bar. And it was one of these kinds of clubs in the 90s that would rotate. So it would go from like Saturday night, it would be in one club. And then maybe the next weekend, it would be in another one. For years, it was in just one spot right on Melrose, right by the freeway.
Yeah.
At that old anti-club. But, yeah. But
when I played at dozens of times when it's called the anti-club.
Oh, I'm sure you did. I know it very intimately, unfortunately. not unfortunately, I'm joking. Yeah. But when it was in the downtown area, there were just, I remember walking out at like 2:30 and there'd be so many, and this was night after night after night, just so many amazing taco trucks and like, you know, the Mexican corn with the mayonnaise or just whatever. Oh my God. I do actually miss so many things about LA.
Oh yeah.
In that regard.
I worked at a nightclub also. I worked at a Spaceland
One of the greatest.
One of the greatest clubs. Yes.
Ever.
Ever.
Yeah.
And I'd get off work at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning and drive over to, Alvarado and, just in Sunset and just.
Oh, God. I do miss that. And, it's funny because of obviously Los Angeles proximity to Mexico. There are a massive Mexican population. But Seattle, even though there are like a lot of like Mexican people or Nicaraguan or, from wherever, it just doesn't have quite the same.
No, in intensity and just the flow. There are some great restaurants over towards White Center.
Yeah.
There's some really great restaurants.
Yeah,
and here on the island, we have one of the,
Alegría. Zamorano's.
Zamorano's. Yes. It's got some of the best fish tacos I've ever had in my entire life.
I ate there yesterday.
I did too. it's like some of the best food.
Oh, it's so good.
It's like going home.
Yeah. Maybe we should talk to Jorge and get him to have a little food truck at 3 o'clock in the morning and we can pretend that we're walking out of nightclubs. Come on, Jorge.
Oh, when it all gets back to normal.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Michael, for coming on. I appreciate it. And I always love your stories. Dan Chasen, I always love to hear your stories and all your travels.
I've been everywhere.
Thank you so much, Vashon Island. This was the Cats and Jammer Follies, a travel story show. And I am Megan Hastings, and thank you so much. And come visit us next week, and we will have tales from who knows where in this big bad world. Thank you so much.